Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the UniFay podcast. Today we're going to talk about skills and diversity and gender equality. There's a lot going on these days. Climate change, energy insecurity, greater unpredictability caused by the last two. The pandemic, the list goes on and on. When there are challenges, more hands are always welcomed in our efforts to find a solution. We've seen this before, the necessities of industrialization often thrusted women into the workforce, and the post-war period saw greater immigration into previously widely homogenized racial populations, and we've all been better for it. You know, it's allowed society and industry especially to be more innovative and resilient and accessible to everyone. Unfortunately, while the European rail supply industry is being depended upon to underwrite the European Union's 21st century transformation and everything that goes along with it, a 2019 study by a dedicated European Commission expert group found that our industry is experiencing an aging workforce that is struggling to keep pace with the technological advancements that will be key in the next generation of rail and transport in general. Yeah, the short version is rail suppliers are suffering from a labor shortage. With the EU Green Deal and sustainable and smart mobility strategy calling for a serious step up in rail traffic in the next decade and then tripling in by 2050, there's not much time to lose. So today, for this episode of the UniFay podcast, I'm sitting down with Anna Manuelito, UniFay Public Affairs Manager and Staffer Work Package 8 Communication Co-Leader, to discuss the problem and how suppliers are working to get people from a variety of different backgrounds into rewarding and well-paying jobs in our sector. So, without further ado, I'm your host, Robert Arnell, and welcome to episode 2. Hola, Ana, ¿qué tal?
Hola, Rob. Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Look, I've been trying Duolingo, but it's clearly not working as well as your Spanish classes.
I'm also trying to do my best in my Spanish classes, so very happy to be here with you today.
All right. So, as I struggle with my Spanish and you're powering ahead, let's talk about skills and skills training, and hopefully, I think Staffer has some stuff that can help me with my Spanish.
Yes, I hope so.
Cool. So, for those not familiar with the situation, can you please tell me a little bit about the European Commission Expert Group on Rail Supply Competitiveness and its findings?
Right, thanks very much, Rob, for your question. And once again, very happy to be here with you today. Well, basically, the European Commission Expert Group on Rail Supply Competitiveness settled the scene and basically identified a couple of interesting findings, let's say. First, as in any other sector, we are facing problems related to the retirement of employees, given the broader European problem of aging population. So this is one of the findings. The second one is that we are transforming our societies, right? So you agree with me. And the rail industry is not, of course, an exception. So when we talk about the digital and the green transition, we should also understand that skills need also to evolve, right? So currently there are mismatches between available and demanded skills. And according to the expert group findings, there are difficulties, for instance, to find railway engineers, because apparently rail is not so appealing and sexy when it comes to high-tech jobs. So, but things are changing, mentalities are also changing, and we are taking important steps to tackle these challenges, I would say.
Yeah, which I find strange that there's not this impetus to, you know, enter the rail supply industry. I mean, everyone, when they're a kid, wants to drive a train or, you know, be some sort of, you know, engineer, design cool things. And so I hope that we find a way to get them in.
Especially because we are now developing the trains of the future, which are very much different and much more appealing than the trains of the past.
Yeah, I mean, different fuel sources and all that,
indeed,
right? And cybersecurity, there's some cool stuff going on.
I suppose so.
So, I mean, one of the ways that we're hoping to get these people into the industry is through Staffer.
Indeed.
What is it's a cool acronym because it works with our staffing problems, but like, what does it mean? What does Staffer stand for? And what is it doing?
Right, okay. Well, it's good that you ask about Staffer. This is one of the main activities related to skills that we are working here at Unifed together with our members. And it's also funny that to think about the acronym, as many of the European projects have big acronyms, and some of them are very difficult to explain. But I think that this one is not the case. So Staffer is an European Erasmus Plus project, funded project, and comprises more than 30 partners across Europe, including Unife. So Staffer stands for Skills Training Alliance for the Future of European Rail. You see, it's not that difficult, right?
No.
As the name indicates, this is a consortium of different stakeholders ranging from industry to operators, infrastructure managers, educational institutions, and the list goes on, that basically are working together with a number of interesting objectives to reach. First, identify the skills that are necessary because of the challenges that I just mentioned before. The second objective is basically to develop trainings that will fit the rail needs. We are basically talking about a match between industry needs and the educational offer that should be available. So it's like a Tinder rail match, if I may say, if you understand what I mean. So the third objective is to facilitate the transnational mobility for students, for apprentices, for trainees and other staff groups, basically to make sure that people can have more opportunities abroad. And the last one is basically to have a long-term strategy and an action plan for our industry, for the rail sector in the years to come, and also to take into account the objectives and the findings of our project. So I think that it's quite straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just mapping out the different opportunities that are available at the moment and then improving them so that people can take advantage of them.
Exactly.
I was looking at some of the preliminary findings of Staffer. What I found really interesting, though, is that it's not the same across all countries, right?
No.
I mean, there's some countries that, from your findings, have, you know, extensive programs at all levels, from the technical education level to the postgraduate level. But there's some countries that don't even have a bachelor's program for it. So Staffer's, I'm assuming, end goal is to kind of uniform all of that so you can take advantage of, you know, the freedom of movement that we all enjoy here in Europe.
No, you are totally right. So Staffer really intends to first to match basically the needs of the industry and to transform it to curricula and to make sure that we have much more offer in the future than the one that we have today. And also make sure with that that we will be able to have more students, more young professionals to get into our industry. This is what we really need and what we are looking for.
Cool. So you bring up a good point. What are we looking for? The blueprints, you know, work package 3 assessed supplier needs going forward. But what were the specific skills that they were like, all right, we need this right now?
It's a very interesting question, Rob. Look, let's take it as a non-exhaustive list because there are plenty of profiles that we will need. But I would highlight a couple of them in today's podcast. If we think about, once again, the green and the digital transition that we just talked about before, one can imagine that many of the skills needed are related to innovation and technological trends. So we will all see more and more hydrogen, battery, fuel cell trends, right? So we need the skills to accompany these tendencies and this kind of transformation. We need, for instance, systems engineering, automation engineers, technicians, cloud-based signaling, virtual reality simulators, cybersecurity, and big data analysts, and the list goes on and on. But look, we also need transversal skills like problem-solving skills, communication skills, association skills that are fundamental in any job. Don't you agree with me?
So I mean like communication skills, you mean like languages.
Exactly.
So that, you know, Spanish operators can deal with their, you know, French counterparts as they cross the border.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, and especially because now we are going more and more into transnational, let's say, mobility. So the trains will cross more and more different countries. So we need to make sure that we speak the same language, or at least we understand each other. And if I may add to the, let's say, the wishing list, not only to have this set of skills that we just mentioned, but also if we can include students, young professionals, and women, then we would have the perfect match ever.
That's amazing. I mean, it's a very wide-reaching, not only geographically, but like skill set project, looking
Indeed.
Very holistically at all of this.
Yeah.
The thing that makes it difficult for me to sometimes understand, you know, these projects and kind of how big the European rail project is, or it's envisioned to be right now, is that you have all these little things. You know, you have alternative fuels, you have signaling, rolling stock innovation, X, Y, and Z, which Stafford is trying to address all of them through curricula. Let's take a look at them kind of as a whole. How do you think the examples that you just mentioned will contribute to long-distance cross-border rail travel, you know, which I guess since the beginning of this year has been explicitly part of DG Move's interconnectivity, decarbonization goal, and the kind of their contribution to this wider EU Green Deal?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Rob. Look, if we want to decarbonize Europe, you need to invest in rail, right?
Yeah.
If you invest in rail, then the industry will grow and grow, and we will be able to have more employees. But for instance, we need employees that have the necessary skills to drive an hydrogen train, right? Or to solve a cross-border signaling problem. So we need to make sure there is a match between the transformation of our industries with the skills and the profiles that we have in our societies. And on top of it, another very interesting point is the mutual recognition of qualifications in our industry, in our sector, to support workers' mobility. And this is fundamental because of the transformation that you just mentioned before. We will have cross-border rail travel much more, more often, let's say, than in the past, because trains will cross member states more and more. So there is no decarbonization nor interconnectivity in Europe without people. Let's be clear about it. Have you tried to do an omelet without eggs? So that's exactly the same rationale behind here, you know? So you need to invest in people in order to grow and make sure that rail will play a fundamental role in decarbonizing our societies and our economies.
I think that's perfect.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Is it not
Let's
correct?
Get more people involved. And some of those women, some of those people will have to be women, right? I mean, you can't do it without half the team on board. So, unfortunately, at the moment, women are currently underrepresented in rail and the sector, across all the whole sector. So how do you think education factors into their choice to pursue careers in this industry and in this sector as a whole?
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, unfortunately, you are right. We don't have a lot of women in our industry, in our sector. Unfortunately, women only represent around 20% of the total workforce of our industry. And there is a big gender imbalance that basically we are trying to address, you know? But I think that you raised a fundamental point, which is education. So actually, I'm a woman, and I'm a proud grandchildren of a rail man who devoted his entire life to the Portuguese railways world. And in fact, I did not listen to my grandfather when I was young. He always talked with so much passion about rail, about what rail can bring to our societies, not only in terms of green solutions. Of course, back in the 90s, we are not super worried about climate change, right? But rail can bring to, but he was mentioning all the time what rail can bring to every and each of us in terms of social dimension. The way that we travel, it was fundamental and is still fundamental. So maybe it could have been a bit different if at school, for instance, I would have had more awareness about rail. And look, I mean, not to think that this is a sector for men and mid-age boring people. Well, I have to say that my grandfather was by far not a boring man. But I think that, you know, to be very frank with you, we need to cut stereotypes in our societies, you know, and have more women in the transport sector, and more concretely in the rail sector. Don't you agree with me? We also need to make sure that we have more educational offers at schools, training centers, universities, everything that we just discussed in the framework of our Staffer project. We should also have more mentoring courses and communicate about it, you know, talk about it. Make sure that everyone understands that rail is the future of our societies. And for this to happen, guess what? You need people, right? So I think as UNIFE, we have also an important role to play in terms of, you know, raising awareness, communicate, promote the rail industry. We have been developing a number of interesting initiatives in this regard. For instance, like the Women in Rail Award, to honor basically women who have, you know, a very interesting profile, a very good performance in the rail sector. And there are so many examples to talk about, you know. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they say the future is female, and rail has to be indicative of that change. I mean, but I think our last two transport ministers, commissioners, have been women, and they've, you know, really excelled and pushed the limit on it. And that's only the most high-profile case. We have, you know, women leading in this industry through and through, and it's just about, you know, creating representation and so that other people see the opportunities that are available to them.
You are totally right. I mean, the future basically is everything we want to make out of it, right? And it also includes industries, jobs, sectors that in theory are not fit for us as women. Look, in my home country, our poet Fernando Pessoa one day wrote the following, and I find it very, very nice. I have in myself all the dreams of the world, you know, and it's really true, don't you think? I really think so. So I will give you an example that always happened with me when I was young. I'm coming from a country where football is the most popular sport ever. So I played football for many, many years because I really like the sport, and I still do, but well, I don't play as good as
the
before.
Knees are going, aren't they?
So, and I always heard comments like, you are a girl, you know, so you shouldn't play football with the boys. But sorry, I never liked dolls. So we need to break stereotypes in our lives, you know. Also, make sure that our educational and professional context also accompanies the transformation of our societies. There are no jobs meant for men, and there are also no jobs meant for women. You know, why? Why that? It doesn't make any sense. Don't be afraid of being different and try new things. And rail, I mean, once again, is playing a huge role in our societies, the way we travel, the way we transport goods, the way we do business. We need, basically, to leave a world for our future generations, right? So what's best to do so than working for the rail supply industry? We are building the trains of the future, you know? So, and I'm very, very sure that young women and girls would be very happy to be part of the rail supply industry. There is a future, and it's very, very interesting. We need more Simone Veils, and we need more Madame Curies in our industry and in our societies, I have to say.
I think so too, because I mean, even without having those perspectives, our rail systems are not, or and vehicles and, you know, network, the whole thing isn't optimized or being informed by their perspectives.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's things, little things, like seeing three steps up on a tram, because, you know, this was built, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, and just being like, this isn't suitable for older people, people with disabilities, women with strollers, men with strollers. And so I hope that, you know, young women and girls take your advice and just really see how impactful impactful this work can be.
Yeah, I think that we are going to discuss a little bit more in details what you just mentioned about diversity, inclusiveness in our sector, and the way that we are transforming basically our products and so on. But you are totally right. I mean, the way we see things now happening is by far different from the way that you saw in the past. So we are transforming, and I hope that our students, our young professionals would see the rail supply industry with different eyes now as part of the solution, as part of a future that we all need to, you know, to preserve for our future generations, basically.
Okay. I think, it's a big dream and we're going to get there.
You know, but I said that I have in myself all the dreams of the world.
I think I'm a little bit more narrow-minded, unfortunately, but not on this. Hopefully not on this topic. But before I spoil too much of what you wanted to get to on diversity and the importance of representation, UNIFE recently launched its gender equity advisory group and a matching policy that kind of is going to inform the work of that advisory group. In-house, just to, you know, give the audience, the listeners, a little bit of background, there was a whole process that went into establishing these values. So what importance, after experiencing that process, do you think an organization gains the lessons they learn by officially setting its values and, you know, around inclusivity and diversity and representation? How do you feel like you came out of it?
Yeah. Oh, yes, Rob. Look, I mean, I'm particularly happy for these, I have to say. I think, well, in today's world, we still don't pay enough attention, you know, to our values and principles as society. We are always late. We are always running for something like a high-speed train, you know. But I also think that things are changing a bit, fortunately. And for me, it's really important, you know, to work for an organization that is basically doing the right thing, you know, because people are not robots, right? So we are guided by values and by principles. So at UNIFE, as you rightly mentioned, we introduced in our internal regulations the UNIFE gender equity policy. But actually, what does this mean? Is it only super nice, well-written corporate documents of blah, blah, blah? Actually, there is a number of concrete stuff out there, you know? So I would like briefly to mention a couple of interesting initiatives that we have internally at UNIFE. For instance, at UNIFE, we aim not to hold public engagements if women are not represented. And I think that it's quite straightforward. We need to promote the participation of women, but not because they are women, but because they have the same expertise as men, and they are, let's say, underrepresented. UNIFE also encourages our members, for instance, to elect women representatives in our internal committees, task force, and achieve 50-50% representation. Once again, we need to make sure that women are represented in our industry. Another thing that I would like to mention is, for instance, the policy on harassment and discrimination based on gender. It's not possible. It cannot happen anymore, you know? So it should not be tolerated in any place. Finally, a very interesting point is that UNIFE has also been committed to equal compensation between women and men within our staff, and there is no gender pay gap in our organization, and we should be proud of it. We should talk about it, you know, because actually, if you look at Europe, we still face a significant gender pay gap of 14%.
Really?
Can you believe it?
No, that's absurd.
It's insane, and we need to change things, and if we start changing in our own organizations, so it's a starting point, right? So we need to be proud of it. We need to communicate about it. So I could have mentioned many other initiatives, many other examples of what we are doing around gender equity and inclusivity, but maybe this topic would require, let's say, a full dedicated podcast.
When we have you back, that'll be your next episode.
Why not? I would be very happy.
And also, if you're looking for experts in trade, skills, all this stuff. Anna's very available. Just give us a call.
I would be very happy to talk about trade as well.
Let's make it happen. So I spoiled it a little bit, but we're back. All right. Diversity is often hailed as a prerequisite, something that needs to be involved in the process to have a successful project. You know, more opinions allow us to better see the needs of a community that those products will serve. So, what would the outputs of a more representative European rail sector look like? You know, in your utopian rail network of the future that have women and people of all different backgrounds and so on and so forth involved in devising these, what would it look like?
Look, I mean, I think that many things are happening already, and we should be happy about it. Of course, we can do always better. But let's say the following. For me, like, diversity is what makes our world the most beautiful place I know, okay? So diversity for me is not just about skin color, race, gender, but also everything that is transformed, you know, to make us feeling good about who we are and where we are. And the rail supply industry is transforming our societies and is replying to our needs as human beings, you know. Yeah. Also taking into account that we are all different. So I really believe that an even more inclusive and representative sector depends on being up to the challenges and the differences of each of us. I'm different than you, you are different than me, and so on. So basically, we need trains, we need metros, we need trams, we need whatever adapted to our needs. Let's think about something concrete, and I would like to give you some concrete examples. Imagine, if you like to travel with your bike, the train, the metro, the tram should allow you to transport your bike, right? If you are a little bit fat, so let's say that the train should ensure that you have enough space to feel comfortable during your journey, right? If you are blind, you should be able to read important information inside the train. And the list goes on. So I'm going to tell you another personal story, and once again about my grandparents. So my grandmother was in a wheelchair for many years, and we used to travel quite often by train, influenced, of course, by my grandfather. And it was very difficult to get the wheelchair into a train sometimes, you know, not to mention the infrastructure itself, the train stations, which were not all prepared for these situations back in the 90s and in the early this century. And fortunately, these type of situations have been disappearing. We need an industry and a sector that basically welcomes all grandmothers and all the other people in wheelchairs, you know. And I would like to say something else. When I started working at Unife, one of the things that a colleague alluded to me was, once again, the social importance of the rail transport in our society. And it's really true. For me, rail transport is the backbone, you know, of affordable but also inclusive travel that responds to the needs and to the challenges of each of us as individual human beings. And of course, I wouldn't be happier if the ones who are listening to us today would like to join Rob and myself in this wonderful journey of the European rail supply industry.
I'm always looking for new friends. Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing to think about, because just how much of your life do you spend on public transport? And, you know, sometimes you think, especially with long distance rail, you know, a nice vacation and so on and so forth. But, you know, I took the metro here this morning to the office.
I took the tram.
You took the tram? Okay. I wish I took the tram. I like the views a little bit more, but that's personal preference. No hate against, you know, our underground colleagues. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to get my education between riding public transport options, whether it was metros or trams or even buses, you know. what up to our friends in road transport.
Exactly.
But it just, you know, my life would be completely different. I wouldn't have had the educational opportunities. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do like sports after school. And so, yeah, it just, if you really take a moment to think about it, it's these needs. Rail specifically and transport in general are hugely, are huge shapers of our day-to-day lives, who we are, our identity, and so our identity should then inform the system back again.
You are totally right. As we were saying, out of record, we have so many good stories, you know, when we were young or even in our current lives. And public transportation, trains are always there, metros, trams, whatever. So it's part of our life, it's part of our society. There is a very important role to play in decarbonizing our industry and in decarbonizing also our economy. And I'm very, very sure that in the future, we will have much more colleagues, be it women, young professionals, students, as long as we will have this, you know, good image of, you know, like having a very important role to play in the way that we are going to transform our society.
So we're going to keep on plugging away with Staffer, with our other initiatives around gender, around representation, around diversity, and Europe and the rail supply industry is going to get us where we need to go.
In a high speed train level.
All right, this conversation is over, Anna. But I'm very happy that you joined us today. Thank you. Your comments make it seem like we're advancing towards a more equal e-rail sector and the benefits that will come with that development. So thank you for joining us on the pod today and telling us about Staffer and Unifay's gender equity efforts. And listener, thanks for taking a shot on us. We're learning how to do this. And if you want to support us going forward, if you like the podcast, you could find us on Spotify. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Stitcher. This video will be up on Vimeo and YouTube, I think. And follow us, subscribe, turn on notifications, write us a nice handwritten note. If you have a typewriter, do the whole Tom Hanks thing and write us with that. It would be lovely. I'll frame it. But before you do that, have a great day. And I hope that we see you on the next one.
And don't forget to take trains. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's a wrap.
I think that it was okay.
Uh-huh.